Hello, humans. Hello, hello. Happy Friday to you. This is Ellie Krug, the guest host for Mike McEntee, who is still on vacation, and he'll be on vacation until next Wednesday, so you've got me till then. I poked my head into Matt Miller's show during a break and said, you know, you should interview me to see, ask me what it's like to guest host. And he said, pull up a chair. So that's how you heard me at the end of Matt's show a little bit ago. It is Friday. I've got like a number of hodgepodge items, a number of different things to cover. We'll cover a bit of the landscape from here to there. But right now, for us to begin, we're going to visit with our friend Ellen Ratner. Ellen, you're my new friend, but I know that you've been a friend of this show regularly. Ellen, are you there?
I am here.
Ellen is with the, oh, you've got to give it to me, Talk Media.
Talk Media News.
That's right. And Ellen, let's talk a little bit about, you know, this pretty boring week that we've had in politics. You know,
you
it's
know,
just start of the year. Not much has happened, has there?
We have covered every president, at least I have, since the first term of Bill Clinton. And even though Monica Lewinsky kept us very busy, this guy has kept us busier than anybody has ever kept the press.
Well, no question about it. He's full of a lot of material. So let me get your take. I mean, you and I talked on Tuesday. And on Tuesday, no one had any idea about Fire and Fury by Michael Wolff breaking. It broke, and my God, has it broken. And so I'm sure that most of our audience is all well aware of what the book is about. And my question to you is, where do you think this is going to go in the end? Because we're all fixated on excerpts from the book. Go ahead.
Mr. Wolf has not been known to be 100% on the up and up in some of his past writings. The other thing he's done, which actually as a journalist, even though I'm a liberal journalist, I don't believe in breaking somebody's off-the-record comments, which apparently he has done. However, what I want to say is everything will either be on the tapes or won't be on the tapes. And he says he has tapes of what he did and his interviews, and I have a feeling that the special counsel is going to ask for them, but the tapes are where it is at.
Okay. And the special counsel will be asking him not to go after Michael Wolff, but really rather to go after and understand if there's more evidence there of either collusion or cover-up or whatever, or stonewalling, right?
That's exactly right, so that he would be very interested in the tapes. Now, also, as you know, there has been some recent information that the special counsel has not commented on, but has to do with what they may have known in terms of the dossier that was compiled about Trump. And so now you have two members of Congress, including Lindsey Graham, who's very close friends with John McCain, have said that they want to look into this dossier, and they want the special counsel to look into, and the FBI to look into this dossier and find out whether the guy was on the up and up. I mean, you cannot make this stuff up. And frankly, it takes all of our energy in Washington and all over the United States to figure out what is going on a minute-by-minute basis here.
Right. And what you're reporting on is the news of today that reporting out of the Senate Judiciary Committee is a letter to the FBI, to the Justice Department, asking them to investigate Christopher Steele, who authored the dossier, on the assumption that he may have lied to Congress about some contacts he had with the press. At least that's my understanding of the reason for the reference letter.
And did he lie about what he put in the dossier? That's the other big issue, of course.
Sure, but even if he did lie about what's in the dossier, as long as he didn't testify about those lies, and he has not testified before Congress, you know, I think that's a hard sell to prosecute him about
the
anything.
Thing is that, you know, you can even, if you decide to make a case in a court of law in the United States of America, you're allowed to lie. Where you can't lie is on deposition. You can't lie to the FBI. But if you just are putting forth a case or something like that, you're welcome to lie all you want.
Right. But my friend Rachel Maddow keeps telling me that time and again, everything in that dossier is coming up true. And that they've not found any untruths in the dossier. So that combined with Fire and Fury, I've just got to, what I'm wondering about is the president's mental state. He has a habit of getting singularly focused on things, and he has a habit of brooding and then a habit of lashing out. Your thoughts on that? I mean, do you see this as further deteriorating his stability? I know that you're not a psychologist, but...
Because I used to work in mental health, as you know, and before I became a journalist. And there's an interesting book out called The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump. 27 psychiatrists and mental health experts make an assessment. And the fact is that there is something in American psychiatry called the Goldwater Rule, obviously made around Goldwater. And they say that you cannot assess somebody until you've seen that person, you know, as a patient. So that certainly held true. And I was just at the American Psychiatric Association convention in San Diego in May, and there was huge arguments about the Goldwater Rule versus duty to warn. And so there is a whole lot of debate right now about whether people should be talking about Donald Trump's mental health without having ever examined him personally, or whether, in fact, that there is some truth to his actions. And so, and therefore, they have a duty to warn the United States of America populace who is voting. So I don't really know what is happening right now, but I do know that that is an argument that is taking place within the American Psychiatric and therefore also the American Psychological Association.
Okay. And so then, there is a CNN report out about Dr. Brandy Lee, who is a psychiatrist with Yale, who early in December briefed about a dozen members of Congress, including congressmen as well as senators, and one Republican senator who has not been named, about Donald Trump's fitness. And Dr. Lee made the argument that she wasn't violating the Goldwater Rule, but rather exercising her First Amendment rights about being a private citizen, expressing some concerns about the fitness of a president. What do you think about that?
Well, it's interesting because, of course, she is the one who co-authored the book, The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump. She actually authored it. She has not only an MD, but a Master's of Divinity. And she, in the introduction is written with her and somebody who I used to know when I was in Boston, named Dr. Judith Herman, who is an expert in abuse. And so the question is whether Dr. Lee, when she informed Congress, and apparently there was one Republican senator there who she would not name, when she talked to members of Congress, or when she talked to mainly members of the Senate, but there were also members of Congress, she said it was bicameral. So, again, I wasn't in the meeting, so I don't know what she said, but if it has anything to do like the book, it's very, very worrisome.
Worrisome in the sense of the conclusions that she's making about the president, because the president is exhibiting a variety of different mental health conditions. And we've got narcissism like right off the top of the hat. So
because of his sleeping pattern, she has also said in the book that hypomania may be an issue as well. So we just don't really know. And again, she hasn't examined him, and most people I know have not. Anybody I know in the mental health profession has not examined him. But his behavior is certainly concerning to many, many people.
Yeah, and I would put it in a much more serious category than concerning. I think that it's a threat to our country, but I'll speak about that at the end of the show. Ellen, what do you think is going to be on the plate for next week? What's coming up that maybe we want to pay attention to?
Oh, my gosh. Well, first of all, the budget turns into a pumpkin on the 19th. Well, that's not next week, but it's really sort of at the end of next week. The end of 2 weeks from now, I guess. And so the concern is, of course, what happens with the budget. The president wants a wall built. But as you know, you can dig under a wall. You can use submarines. You can do a lot of things these days that you couldn't do maybe 4 or 5 years ago. So that's a big, big concern. And the president wants his budget through. The Democrats are demanding that DACA, which is the Dreamers program, be included in this. And so we'll see what happens. I mean, I honestly don't know where the negotiations are. They tried to have negotiations this week in the Senate and the House, and they apparently did not come to any fruition. So that's not a good sign for America.
Okay, no, it's not a good sign at all. I don't see any hope for people to start suddenly communicating with each other in a respectful manner. I am remembering days when I grew up where everybody went and got a drink together afterwards, after being on the floor of the House or the Senate, debating ideas rather than demeaning each other. And so,
right, there's even a congressional club on one of the corners where Democrats and Republicans used to go for a drink afterwards, and it's a closed club, et cetera, but it doesn't have people at it anymore.
Okay. Well, it's just, you know, I mean, that's a whole worth of a whole show just talking about how it is that we can't get along with each other. Ellen, it's been really great to talk with you.
Thank you.
I've enjoyed getting to know you this week, but I guess I'll talk with you again on Monday.
That's correct.
Have a great weekend. Keep your eye to the news, and I'll talk to you on Monday. Thanks so
you
very much.
Have a great weekend. Thank you.
It's great. I've been speaking with Ellen Ratner from Talk Media News. You're listening to Ellie Krug, who is subbing in for Mike. I'll be back after our break. Thank you.
Well, my heart knows it better than I know myself, so I'm going to let it do all the talking.
The number one source of the Twin Cities gay scene is All Digital. Follow Twin Cities Gay Scene on Facebook and Twitter. Sign up for the Scene Shot email blast for weekly updates and chances to win great prizes. No app is needed to view the bi-weekly web editions of Scene. It's GLBTQ media for the mobile generation. Find it all at TwinCitiesGayScene.com. That's TwinCitiesGayScene.com.
Who's your most trusted companion? Who's with you 24/7? What do you never leave home without? Your phone. But the screen is shattered. Don't panic. Bring it to Computer Revolution with cell phone repair. We have over 18 years experience fixing computer devices, all brands, all carriers. We'll replace that screen and have it back same day. Computer Revolution with cell phone repair in Roseville at Highway 36 in Fairview. Or call 651-633-6600. We fix phones. Same day. 7 days a week.
I'm Lori Fitz from Connections Radio Show, and this Saturday at 9 a.m., we'll be talking about Theater Unbound's 17th Annual Extreme Theater Smackdown, taking place on January 13th at Stepping Stone Theater. 6 new plays will be created in 24 hours, and on our show, we'll have our own Radio Theater Smackdown, with an original script being created and performed in just 1 hour. Listen in this Saturday, 9 a.m. on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Are your parents aging and needing help with their affairs? Are you handling their financial accounts? Should they put you on the title to their bank accounts or home? Does a trust make sense? If you are unsure of the answers to any of these questions, call Unique Estate Law now. This is Chris Timchuk, and you can have confidence knowing that whether your situation is simple or complex, protecting your family is my first concern. Find me at uniqueestatelaw.com. or call 952-260-1806.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop. OP.
And we're back. You're listening to Ellie Krug sitting in for Mike McEntee. And I was reminded, as I should be reminded, that I mispronounced or actually misnamed Matt McNeil's last name. Sorry about that, Matt. I know your last name isn't Miller, and it's really McNeil, and I'm sorry about screwing that up. And so you can, you know, I'll buy you a drink the next time I see you. All right. We've got a hodgepodge here, a number of different things to cover in a relatively short period of time. Since it's Friday, I want to kind of span the spectrum here. So for item number one, it's the question of what will Al Franken do now? A Star Trib article by Judy Keen that appeared today talks about and raises the question of what will Al Franken do? You know, you think about it, he's made quite an investment in Minnesota. And frankly, us Minnesotans have made quite an investment in him. In her Star Tribune article, Judy reminds us that Franken will be 67 come May and that he has great skills. You know, that he does a number of things. As Judy writes, he will be 67 in May, but has shown no appetite for retirement. He could write. He could find an outlet on TV or radio for the skills he showed in cross-examining Trump administration officials during committee hearings. He could remain an advocate for some issues he worked on in the Senate. Privacy, health care, education, farm policy, policing, Wall Street. I endorse absolutely the idea that Al Franken not go away, that he does have a role, continuing role here in Minnesota. But for many of us in Minnesota, the question will be, at what point will we have decided that he has paid the price for errors in judgment and behavior? You know, as a society generally, we are focused on rehabilitation. We're focused on forgiveness rather than on continuing retribution. And I think that as a state, we're going to have to focus on that. We're going to have to come to grips about at what point do we say enough of penalizing Al Franken and allow him to come back and resume a personal and a prominent role in the community. Everyone deserves another chance. They do. And frankly, he's paid a pretty big price so far. So I put that into the hopper for you to think about as you go forward. Second hodgepodge item is remember that tie election that took place last month in Virginia. Over in the Virginia State House, there was a tie vote from November between the incumbent GOP candidate David Yancey and the Democratic challenger Shelley Simmons. And that vote, at first, it came down to the difference between one vote. Then there was a recount. And then it was determined that Shelley, with the one vote in favor of the Republican, then there was a recount in favor of Shelley Simmons. And then yet again, there was another. Then there was an issue about how one vote was to be counted. Virginia court weighed in and indicated that vote should be counted for the Republican. And thus we had a tie. Pretty much past the whole landscape out here in Minnesota was the question of how that tie was going to be settled. And it was settled yesterday with not a coin toss, but with a draw. So there were a number of film canisters with the candidates' names in them placed inside a blue and white ceramic bowl made by Virginia artist Stephen Glass. And a Board of Elections member drew from that bowl. As it turns out, James Alcorn, the chairman of the Board of Elections, drew a film canister with David Yancey's name. That would be the Republican out of the ceramic bowl. So under the draw, as it worked, the Republican got the seat. So this gives the Republicans in the Virginia legislature a 51-49 majority. And that is sure to make things difficult for Virginia's new governor, Ralph Northam. I guess we'll just have to stay tuned and see what happens with that. Item number three in our hodgepodge. And by the way, if you want to call in and, add your own hodgepodge. You can do that today at 952-946-6205. I'd be happy to talk with you in this segment. So our last hodgepodge item is this. Did you catch the swearing in of Doug Jones and Tina Smith yesterday? Now, I think that there was a little bit of staging here because when I saw it, it was kind of a twofer. They had both Smith and Jones standing next to each other, you know, with their right hands raised and Vice President Pence giving them the oath of office. However, after that came what seemed to be the private swearing-in pictures or the solo swearing-in pictures. And as maybe some of you have seen, although I didn't see this until late last night, there was a picture of Doug Jones holding his right hand up, the Bible being held by his wife, wife looking very solemn, very serious towards Doug Jones. We had Vice President Pence holding a script about the oath facing Doug Jones. Doug Jones has his hand right hand up. And in between Doug Jones and his wife stood Doug Jones' 22-year-old son, Carson Jones. As it turns out, Carson is gay. And he's openly. I didn't just out him on that. He's very public about being gay. And in what Alexandra Schwartz from The New Yorker called, quote, the title of her piece about this is, quote, Carson Jones gives Mike Pence the side eye to end all side eyes. And so you've got this scene where Carson Jones is standing between his father and his mother. He should be looking at his father. His face is sort of facing his father, but his eyes are looking at Mike Pence. And you might wonder, well, what's unusual about that? Well, I've got to tell you because, not on this station. I don't have to tell anybody this. You know this, that Mike Pence is vehemently anti-LGBTQ. He's not a friend of mine and certainly a friend of my community. And so we've got Carson Jones just giving him the eye. Which I think if you have that phrase, a picture is worth a thousand words, I'd say that this picture is worth a million phrases. So if you get a chance, by all means, Google Carson Jones gives Pence the side eye and you'll find the picture. It will come up very readily. It's been a very interesting week in American politics and in America generally, you know, and some of these stories get caught and fly by. I mean, they're off to the side because we're so focused on things like fire and fury. I read last night that, you know, midnight the book went on sale, that there were, you know, one bookstore in Washington, D.C. was open for an hour after midnight, but only selling that book. That was the only book that they were going to sell. You know, so we get focused on that and all this other wonderful, interesting stuff goes by the side and we don't pay attention to it. Well, thank God there's Ellie Krug to bring it to our attention. I'm just so happy to be able to say that. When we come back from our break, we're going to speak with Drew Schaefer, who is the executive director of Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid. We're going to talk a little bit about the great work that Legal Aid does for low-income people. I think you're going to be surprised by some of the information, some of the facts about how Legal Aid works and about the people that it protects. And before we come back, I mean, when we're going to go off now, there's going to be Art Beat for the Week that you're going to hear as soon as my voice ends. Bye.
This is Art Beat for the Week with Lori Fitz. Opened in 1990, Northern Clay Center is a fabulous ceramic arts organization. Whether you're a ceramics newbie or an established ceramic artist, Northern Clay Center opens the door to discovery. They have exhibitions, workshops, lectures, and publications that reach local, regional, national, and even international audiences. Running from January 12th to February 25th will be four Jerome artists, highlighting the work of the 2017 Jerome Ceramic Artist recipients, Susan Feigenbaum, Autumn Higgins, Lisa Truax, as well as the 2016 Jerome Ceramic Artist of Color Residency recipient, Ellie Bryan. First up, Susan Feigenbaum. Her sculpture evokes mystery and ambiguity through biomorphic forms that straddle the boundaries between the human, the animal, and the imagined. Her intent is to connect the world of our subconscious with the world of everyday perceptions and reality. She uses opposing colors and surfaces to confront each other and lure viewers to look more closely. She's teasing you into a forbidden touch of the object upon the pedestal. Feigenbaum says, "I create ceramic sculpture by suggesting a presence beyond ourselves and the private world within us. My intent is to communicate a sense of innocence and unease at once." Next, Autumn Higgins. Her ceramic work acts as a portraiture of places she lives. Her wares bring attention to the beauty of the urban landscape and often overlook details of life. She makes illustrated functional porcelain wares. Form follows illustration without impeding function. The elements she depicts are representative and unique to her local urban landscape, appealing to residents of the Twin Cities as they recognize their city in the landmarks and buildings depicted. While regional, the portraits remain their ability to appeal on a universal level. A muted color palette gives the work an unimposing quality, while simple, hand-drawn lines present vulnerability and persistence. Function bridges the distance between the viewer and drawing, inviting an investigative touch and personal connection to the illustration. Third artist, Lisa Truax, is interested in the contrast between nature and modernity. She unearths our ability to disregard the influence and intentional impact of our contemporary society has on our perceptions of nature. Her work maps the places we call natural, which are often created and maintained as part of our culture in an attempt to reconnect the viewer to nature. She combines traditional ceramic materials with found and sourced natural materials. Remnants of a human past become visible through this process, raising questions about wildness and wilderness, human versus geologic time, permanence and impermanence. And the fourth artist, Ellie Bryan, draws many parallels between the instinctual nature of animals and the intuitive nature of women. She believes her porcelain vessels can harbor life as vessels, spirits as urns, and give sustenance to their holder through food and drink. She invokes the ancient and the traditional in her objects, referencing pagan symbolism and ritual through utilitarian clay, allowing her to create objects people can readily welcome into daily life. Bryan is also a songwriter. She plays the banjo and sings in a style that draws inspiration from her mixed-race ancestry and tradition. She strives to portray an atmosphere of unity within our society. And if you are looking for a creative date night activity, consider signing up for Clay for Couples Workshop, which takes place Saturday, January 13th from 7 to 10 p.m. This unique date night activity is sure to impress your partner. Sign up with your special friend for Clay for Couples and learn about the secrets of throwing pottery on the wheel in a fun and relaxed environment. As part of the event, you'll receive instruction and materials for two adults. Pots will be ready to pick up in about 2 weeks. Northern Clay Center is located one block south of the 25th and Riverside exit off the Interstate Highway 94. And for more information on Northern Clay Center's exhibitions and workshops, go to northernclaycenter.org. That's Art Beat for the week. I'm Lori Fitz from Connections Radio Show, airing live Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, Matt McNeil for Rudy Luther Toyota. One of the best parts of owning a new Toyota from Rudy Luther Toyota is the service that comes with the vehicle. With my service package, I don't pay for anything. Oil changes, routine maintenance, and front-to-back coverage, it's an amazing stress reliever to have the cost of maintaining my vehicle included in the original cost. And Rudy Luther's top-notch staff takes care of everything, making my life even better. Find out more at Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Hello, hello. You've got Ellie Krug here sitting in for Mike McEntee, who's on vacation. We are progressing here on Friday. I've got a great guest, as I said before we took our break. Drew Schaefer, who is the executive director of Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid, is on the line. Drew, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon, Ellie, and thanks for having me on.
Oh, Drew, I'm thrilled to be able to have you here. You know, Drew, I wanted to have you on the show in part because people hear the phrase legal aid a whole lot, but they don't have any idea of really what it is. And what I'd like you to do is describe, if you could, very quickly, what is it about core needs, core human needs that legal aid helps protect?
Well, thanks, Ellie. So equal justice for all is a foundational principle in our democracy. And at Legal Aid, what we do is we vindicate the civil rights of ordinary Minnesotans every day. We provide meaningful access to justice. We believe that access is nothing without meaning, and we help people vindicate their rights in the court system or interacting with various systems and societies so that they can achieve justice and have their rights respected and vindicated in their basic day-to-day lives and in with their basic day-to-day needs.
Right. But when we're talking about rights, I mean, legal aid doesn't help people with the dog barking next door. I mean, these are about protecting core human needs like housing, right? And some other needs.
Yeah. So the things that we do, and our work is very broad, but we provide legal help with people's health care, getting them the food and sustenance they need for their families, protecting the rights of people with disabilities, the rights of people's keep a roof over their head, to be protected from displacement and illegal evictions, to protect people from discriminations, to protect consumers from predatory business practices, to protect children from abuse and neglect, to protect the elderly from predatory practices of some, to protect immigrants and new Americans, and to help them have the legal safety net they need to live and participate in our communities.
Right. And when we deal with legal aid, it's not automatic that every lower income person gets it. The system is governed by tied closely to the federal poverty guidelines. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. So to be eligible for civil legal aid services, generally speaking, you have to be at about 125% of federal poverty guidelines. And so what that means is for an individual, that's about $15,000 a year.
That's an individual earning $15,000 a year. That would be the threshold. That would be the maximum, give or take, that a person could earn to qualify for legal aid. Is that right?
Exactly. And okay. For a family of four, the annual income would be around a little over $30,000 a year, if that kind of gives you a frame of reference for what we're talking about.
Right. So we're talking that a family can't earn generally more than $30,000. I know there are exceptions and all that stuff, but I mean, $30,000 is the max that a family can earn in order to be qualified to get legal aid services, right?
That's right. That's right.
And when we talk on the radio here about a family of four living on $30,000 a year, I know that there are people right now, you know, shaking their heads and wondering, how is that possible? But every day you at Legal Aid see a lot of families that are living on a lot less than $30,000. Isn't that right?
Yeah. The people that we're helping, the various disadvantaged populations that we serve, including the poor and people with disabilities, the elderly, children, survivors of domestic and family violence, military veterans and immigrants, are often living in deep poverty, well below those figures that we just discussed. People are living off of hardworking, ordinary Minnesotan families are living off of, you know, paycheck to paycheck and trying to make ends meet to do all the things and to protect their families' assets and their homes and to do all those things. And we help them do that when they encounter problems in the systems that, you know, govern their lives and with which they interact.
Now, legal aid can't serve everyone who comes to their doors. So what is the percentage of people that you are able to serve?
Civil legal aid offices around Minnesota are forced to turn away 60% of eligible clients. So think about that. We're forced to turn away 60% of people who come to us for help. We do a lot of good in the areas that I talked about, but we're forced to turn away a lot of people who come to us for help.
Why
are due to lack of resources.
Okay. And so talk about, well, first of all, how many offices for legal aid across the state? I mean, just ballpark it for us.
So I work for Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid. We serve Hennepin County and then 19 other counties in central and western Minnesota. There are six other Minnesota Legal Services Coalition legal aid offices that cover basically every square inch of the state of Minnesota, including the northeastern part of the state, the northwestern part of the state, the southern part of the state. And so there are seven Minnesota Legal Services Coalition programs, and then there are several other programs that help people in specialized areas like immigration and coordinating volunteer attorneys and helping smaller regions of Minnesota in addition to the Minnesota Legal Services.
Yeah, and we had John Keller on yesterday from the Immigrant Law Center to talk about DACA. So, Drew, when it comes to having to turn people away, and I want to make sure that our audience understands this, you know, your program, while you get some government grants and some government funding, your program relies heavily on donors. Is that correct?
Yes. You know, we rely on law firms and the legal community who are generous in supporting our work. We also really try to reach out to educate the community at large and individual donors to tell them about the good work we do day to day in their communities. And their support is extremely important to all of our efforts.
Well, and the point I also want to make is this, is while on the criminal side, in most instances, if you can't afford a lawyer will be appointed for you, right?
That's right. And so in criminal law, people have a right to counsel if they face imprisonment for a criminal charge. In civil cases, there is not a similar right to counsel. So, but a lot of the rights that are at issue for people, having a roof over their head, keeping a family stable and, you know, having health care and food and sustenance and having a person's civil rights protected, those rights are extremely important and foundational in people's lives.
Well, let's make sure it's real concrete. So if somebody steals a loaf of bread from a convenience store in Minnesota, they can't afford a lawyer, they'd be appointed a lawyer. If a family of four was at risk of being evicted because the landlord just decided that he didn't want them there and that the landlord felt that he was going to use maybe their immigration status as a reason, you know, to hold that over their head. You know, so a family of four, a mom and a dad and two kids, and they're subject of an unfair eviction. The American system does not provide them with a lawyer. Is that
correct? That's
correct.
They would have to get in touch with us, and then we help many people. But as I said, we're forced to turn away many people who need our help. And ask for our help, but we don't have the resources to represent them or help them in that particular case.
So, Drew, could you give the audience maybe your 800 number and your website, and then could you also tell them how could they help Legal Aid? I mean, and audience members, I cannot stress enough, Legal Aid, critical. It is critical to the preservation of rights for our state. So go ahead, Drew.
So I would encourage all your listeners to go to our website, which is mylegalaid.org. That's mylegalaid.org. That's the website for Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid. There's a description of how you can get help, how you can get involved, how you can give and share. There's information about all the work that we do and what we are doing day to day in people's communities to try to help them. And what I would say is most important is people don't understand what Legal Aid does do day to day to protect people's families, their health care, their housing, and their basic civil rights. And spreading the word about what we do in the community is so important so that people realize that their critical day to day lives are truly affected positively and helped and supported by the work that we do in communities every day.
So Drew, to get that word out, I mean, if a Rotary organization or the Optimist or a church group would like you or somebody from Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid to come speak and explain more in more than just a 10-minute soundbite about what your work is, your critical work, are you willing to show up?
Absolutely. So go to the website, mylegalaid.org, my information is available on the website. And depending on what the audience is, depending on what the needs of a member of the community are, and they want to learn about legal aid, we can find somebody from our office to come and to inform the public and inform the community about what we're doing every day. And a lot of people already know, but I'm surprised to learn every day about people who don't know what we're doing in the community every day. And we're always willing to come out and to engage the community and, frankly, to respond to authentic community need. That's what's most important to me. And that's, you know, my vision for how we're going to move forward at Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid and helping ordinary Minnesotans protect their basic civil rights.
All right. Well, Drew, we have to go, but thank you so very much for being on the line and talking about Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid. That was Drew Schaefer, the executive director of Mid-Minnesota Legal Aid. When we come back, I'm going to do my wrap up for the week, and we'll do that then. Thanks. Bye.
Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin, wherever you are and however you like it, we're just the place you're looking for. Six unique, fun, exciting, winning destinations located throughout central Wisconsin. Make your rounds to Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, or Wisconsin Dells for the hottest slots, most exciting games, award-winning guest service, delicious food and spirits, lodging, and live entertainment. Join the Ho-Chunk Gaming Rewards Club for free. And with a single card, you can earn valuable points no matter which of the six locations you choose to play. That means more exclusive offers, giveaways, cash back, discounts, and much more. Visit us online to see all we have to offer and find the fun times nearest you at HoChunkGaming.com. So wherever you are and however you like it, we're just the place you're looking for. Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin, Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, and Wisconsin Dells.
Experience the difference. Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin.
Must be 21 or over to play.
One Voice Mixed Chorus, Minnesota's LGBTA chorus, returns to the Ordway Concert Hall for Sanctuary, an unforgettable evening of choral music celebrating the music of immigrants who make Minnesota home, including Scandinavian, German, Irish, Mexican, Hmong, and Somali. One Voice will also perform You Will Be Found for Broadway's Dear Evan Hansen and I Come From Good People. That's at the Ordway Concert Hall Friday, January 19th and Sunday, January 21st. Call 651-224-4222 or check out onevoicemn.org for tickets today.
Hello, this is Ellen Krug from Hidden Edges Radio. When I'm not on the radio, I'm standing in front of audiences training about diversity and inclusion and on how to be welcoming to others who are different from us. More than ever, employers and organizations need professional diversity and inclusion training. I can offer that training through my company, Human Inspiration Works, LLC. I'd love to make your workplace or organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
Hello, Richard from Auto Technical. Imagine life without a car, just getting to daycare, then to work on the bus. Do you have a car or truck to donate? We have families waiting for a reconditioned vehicle from Auto Technical. Your gift will change their lives. Remember, we recondition the vehicle so you'll receive a much higher tax deduction. 612-919-5526, autotechnical.org.
And we're back. Hello, hello, humans. This is Ellie Krug sitting in for Mike McEntee, who is on vacation. This is our last segment, my D-Block segment for the day. And I want to talk about something that's really been on my mind a great deal and then was really triggered by an article I saw last night in the Atlantic magazine. And we're going to sort of bookend because Ellen Ratner talked about a psychiatrist by the name of Brandy Lee having briefed members of Congress, both in the House and senators, about the fitness, the mental state of President Trump. And, you know, that briefing really was about whether or not the president is in a position to act as our president, whether he's got the type of skill set and temperament. It's, well, I don't even think skill set's the right phrase, but whether he's got the right temperament and whether he's suffering from clear signs of impairment. That's the word that she used and she's been using. And whether he's losing his grip on reality and reverting to conspiracy theories, I mean, we're hearing a lot of conspiracy theories from him. I mean, we heard about the deep state earlier this week, and the deep state was before Michael Wolff's book came out. And she also briefed on how he's impulsive and volatile and becoming even more so. And what brought me then to an Atlantic Monthly magazine article that came out, it dropped last night. It's by James Fallows. Personally, I am a huge fan of The Atlantic and a huge fan of James Fallows. And he wrote an article entitled, It's Been an Open Secret All Along. And what Fallows does in his book is he writes about and analogizes the open secret. So we've heard that phrase before. We all have experienced open secrets, sometimes in our workplace, but also sometimes in our personal lives. And he analogizes the open secret about Harvey Weinstein, that scandal, where everybody in Hollywood knew that Weinstein was a groper, that he was somebody never to get alone in a hotel room with. And that also how, you know, there was an open secret about Roger Ailes and how he treated women and Bill O'Reilly and how he treated women. And my God, they paid out $37 million or something like that for Bill O'Reilly because of sexual harassment. I mean, these were quote unquote open secrets. And then Fallows goes on to write about Trump's incompetency and unfitness as described by Michael Wolff in his book. And he says that what Wolff is describing is an open secret. And I'm going to quote here from James Fallows' article, the article titled, It's Been an Open Secret All Along. Here's what Fallows writes, quote, Fire and Fury presents a man in the White House who is profoundly ignorant of politics, policy, and anything resembling the substance of perhaps the world's most demanding job. He is temperamentally unstable. Most of what he says in public is at odds with provable fact, from biggest inaugural crowd in history onward. Whether he is aware of it or not, much of what he asserts is a lie. His functional vocabulary is markedly smaller than it was 20 years ago. The oldest person ever to begin service in the White House is increasingly prone to repeat anecdotes and phrases. He has a shallower reserve of historical or functional information than previous presidents and a more restricted supply of ongoing information than many citizens. He views all events through the prism of whether they make him look strong and famous, and thus he is laughably susceptible to flattering treatment from the likes of Putin or courtiers at home. And, as Wolff emphasizes, everyone around him considers him unfit for the duties of his office. Now, and I urge you to go and read this article by James Fallows in The Atlantic. It's been an open secret all along. And Fallows goes on to write about how the secret about Trump has been known ever since the campaign. He notes that almost every major newspaper in the country, including conservative newspapers, came out against Trump, editorialized against his election before the election in November of 2016. He writes that the Republicans, while the Democrats have been investigating the competency of the president with psychological experts and objective tests about fitness, that the Republicans have not been doing a thing, and that with this quote-unquote open secret, that the Republicans have been abdicating their responsibility. He goes on to write that the Republicans, such as the ones who are the independent Republicans like Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, or the thoughtful Republicans like Ben Sasse or Jeff Flake, or the ones who have nothing to lose like Bob Corker and Orrin Hatch, he goes on to write that all of them have abdicated their authority, their responsibility to our country. He writes,
Fallows writes, when they vote as a majority against strong investigations, against subpoenas, against requirements for financial disclosure, and most of all against protecting Bob Mueller and his investigation, they share complicity in the quote-unquote open secret. Fallows concludes, we are watching the political equivalent of the Weinstein board paying off the objects of his abuse. We are watching Fox News pay out its tens of millions to O'Reilly's victims. We're watching it in real time with the secrets shared worldwide and the stakes immeasurably higher. Which then brings me to the last item, and that is that the subject of oath. I mean, I've talked earlier in this show about how Bob Jones and our new senator, Tina Smith, took an oath yesterday. And you know what that oath is? Because I need to remind you, please, that the oath is this, quote, this is either for the House or for the Senate, quote, I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office about which I am to enter. This thing about taking an oath and about having allegiance to the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, this thing about an oath is critical. This, not everyone takes an oath. And our elected officials, particularly many in the Republican Party, are abdicating their oath. They are aware of this open secret about our president, and yet they refuse to do what is the right thing under the circumstances, which is to investigate the fitness of the president using experts, using medical experts, psychological experts, using people who can opine about his fitness. And instead, they are running away from it. They are not fulfilling their oath. Please remind them about their oath. Start using this hashtag, #upholdyouroath. #upholdyouroath. We've got to change the landscape. It is not helping where we're at right now by running away from things. You've been listening to me, Ellie Krug. I want to thank my producer, Brett Johnson. You rock. I'll be back on Monday and Tuesday next week. Have a great week. Try and stay warm. Thank you. Bye.